We'd like to welcome everyone tonight to Karen Scholl's teleseminar. Karen provides a unique approach to horsemanship. I'm your host, Melinda Garish, and I'm from Shirley, Indiana, and we're just about 30 miles east of Indianapolis. We appreciate you joining us tonight, and we want to thank everyone for submitting their questions. And tonight, we've selected five questions for the teleseminar, and the topics tonight are, the first one will be distracted mare in heat, and then we'll go to biting and lifting the feet and behavior at the cross ties and selecting the right hat. Okay, we'll go ahead and get started. The first question is from Sandy from California, and it says, I have purchased your complete set of videos, just started watching them, and really love the light touch, no-nonsense approach you use with the animals. My question is, I have a 10-year-old mare that has a very strong heat cycle, including short cycles in between the normal regular 19 to 21-day period. I've tried herbs at first, then monthly shots, and have resorted to using regimen progesterone during the spring, summer, and fall to temper her hormones during peak season, giving her body a break during the winter months. While she's a very desensitized and compliant mare who I trust on most days, she gets very stallion-like with an abundance of energy in her heat cycles during the winter. She still can show a bit of this behavior while on regimen during the heavy season months. When she gets stallion-like, she is distracted, archy, prances, squeals, calls, and shows off to the other horses. We have checked the ovarian tumors and results were negative. My real concern, though, is that on occasion she will rear while in hand or under saddle with this buildup of energy. What would your position be to the behavior in light of her condition? Sandy.
You know, this is what I'm talking about, you know, when you're watching the videos, Sandy, when I'm talking about when conditions change. And when conditions change for horses, and in this particular case, there's an influx of hormones, that's when we need to step up the leadership. So if you go back to the example of a natural horse dynamic, if she were behaving that way in a herd where there were lead horses above her in the hierarchy or the pecking order of the herd, and oftentimes when we consider a natural herd, you're not necessarily going to see these behaviors because the mare would be in foal. You know, a mare in a natural horse herd, you know, the mare is designed to, you know, be in foal every year. And actually probably in a natural horse herd, she would be a very good mother. A lot of these mares that have this very strong instinct to breed is a very favorable behavior in the wild because it's so strong in them. So this is nature putting good qualities into the horse. The challenge is that she's not in a natural environment, so we're having to make those adjustments. So again, going back to that concept and that philosophy that we're in the lead position, when horses are having trouble, whether it stems from hormonal imbalance or conditions or situations, any of those kinds of things, that's when we need to step up our game. And this is one of the reasons that I ask that people don't bring stallions to my clinic, not because the stallion might have trouble, but oftentimes it will signal or trigger mares to start giving the handlers more challenge. So we're talking about a situation where, you know, under ideal conditions, the regimen's working, it's, you know, not springtime, there's not a stallion, you know, compounding the problem. Those dynamics that I'm teaching in that foundation series of DVDs, it works. The horse has more understanding. It has more respect for our leadership position. The challenge is that when those conditions change, we oftentimes don't need to do less. We need to do more. So think that I'm trying to draw, you know, parallels from our human environment, you know, because most women, we go through the same influx of hormones. And oftentimes you'll see this in young age, you know, when, I don't know about you, but when I was about 13, 14 years old, I honestly don't know why my parents didn't just lock me in the closet, you know, and let me come out when I was 17 or 18, although it wasn't much better then. You know, luckily you move through those transitions, you know, in our lifetime. So we all deal with hormonal changes. And I don't know about you, but oftentimes, you know, things are better for us when we're busy, when we're mentally busy, when we're distracted, when we're just kind of left to our own influx of those hormones. They actually seem, you know, bigger than, not, I don't want to say bigger than they really are, because they really are there. It's a very real situation at a physiological level. But when we get focused on doing something else, oftentimes it's not that it goes away. It's just something is foremost in our mind. So what I like to do when mares get distracted and get into this behavior is I get them busy. I get them busy. I'm like, you need to move this way. You need to move that way. You need to back up. Not just little things. I mean fast. I mean fast and quick and over, and not in a punishing kind of a way, but in a, you know, hey, I need you to move your feet. You don't have time to think about the other horses. You don't have time to think about where you'd rather be. You don't have time to think about even how you feel. I'm going to try to do things with the horse, with the mare in that particular situation, where she's just going to be watching me and going, man, I better not take my eyes off her, because I'm not sure what she's going to ask me to do next, or how quickly or how with what immediacy she's going to expect the response. So it's not about getting after a horse. Sometimes people say, oh, well, you get after him, that kind of thing. That's a whole different attitude. But I do get him busy. Number one thing, whether you're on the ground or on the horse's back, is you can disempower the physiology of the horse by taking their hindquarters away. So what I mean by that, when you watch the DVDs and disengaging the hindquarters, you're looking, when you're in the teaching stage, you're looking for that minimal effort to release and reinforce and refine. Well, when your horse has that, you know, takes a step or two, you know, ask for more, ask for faster, ask for a specific number of steps, you know, look for lightness, those kind of things. So when a horse is disengaging the hindquarters, which means the hind feet, rather than being side by side, one foot is lifting and stepping up under the belly of the horse. So it's called disengaging. The front feet would actually stay still and pivot as if they would stay inside of a hula hoop, while the back feet disengage, you know, all the way around. You can maybe even do multiple circles. But when you do that, you disempower the hindquarters from the behavior such as rearing or bucking or kicking, you know, those kinds of things. So if I'm on the horse's back in any situation, you know, and my horse is starting to decide to do something different, and I need to establish leadership, to me, that is the fastest way to do that, even more so than backing up. If I ask a horse to back up, sometimes that'll earn quick leadership points or get the horse's mind back into who's making the decisions. The problem is to back up, the horse's hindquarters must be engaged, or in other words, powerful. So a horse that's backing up, say I'm up on the horse's back and the horse is having different thoughts, if I go to back that horse up, that horse could very easily go into a position that they would rear. But it's very difficult for them to go into a position of rearing if I lift one rein, activate one leg, and disengage the hindquarters. Okay, so there's a big difference between those two, even though backing up or disengaging the hindquarters will reassert your leadership position. So taking the hindquarters away is a very appropriate response, whether you're on the ground or on the horse's back. But I want to make sure that you understand, you know, it looks like you've done all the, you know, research into the physiology of the horse, and I'll bet from what it sounds like you've probably even considered spaying the mare. And that's not uncommon to do, and it's not a bad thing to do. You know, we all know that, you know, the horse industry is pretty much flooded with horses nowadays, and, you know, with good horses even. And so spaying a mare might be the ultimate solution, you know, for this particular challenge that you're running into. So that's probably the best advice I can give you is, you know, ask for more from her, you know, especially when she's going into her cycle or she's getting distracted or any of those kind of things. Because there isn't anything that's going to ever make a horse never have another thought, you know, depending on the conditions, whether it's hormonal or environmental or, you know, weather-wise or fill in the blank. But it's how you respond to it. Here's the one thing that you can keep in mind. And this is very common across the board, and I've talked about this in other teleseminars. What we tend to do, say the horse is getting upset, what we tend to do, especially if as women, we tend to want to soothe the animal. So if we're asking the horse to do something and they start getting upset, what we have a tendency to do, even if it's just to stop and try to evaluate the situation, we tend to back off of the situation thinking, well, we're having trouble here, so I need to back off. What we're doing, if we understand the principles of it's the release that teaches, we are inadvertently reinforcing that behavior. So if other horses come around and she starts getting excited or, you know, prancing and these kind of things, if we don't take the hindquarters away or do something to reassert our leadership, and we try to do something to calm or soothe or stroke their neck, we don't realize it, but we're inadvertently reinforcing that hormonal behavior. And that's something to keep in mind. Oftentimes when I describe that to people when they're, you know, telling me about a problem, I'll say, you know, it's possible that this is going on, but it's difficult when a horse is having these kind of behavioral problems to remain aware of how we're responding. So a lot of times I'll describe that scenario to people, and you can see them thinking about it, and they go, oh, my gosh, you're right. This horse starts calling or screaming and these kind of things, and we tend to not know what to do, and we either do nothing or we might back off of what we're asking, not even realizing that it's reinforcing that behavior. So those are probably the two main things, you know, to think about. So when you take the DDDs and the information in the DDDs, remember that that's a foundation series. But what you're going to do when you take it into different situations is ask for more, challenge your horse, mix it up, change things, get things so interesting and so provocative that, you know, she just doesn't even have room in her mind to think about what her hormones are telling her to do, but she's going to be simply more engaged and more focused on what it is that you're asking her to do. But if you're asking her to do nothing, just calm down, it doesn't really work that well. So you actually need to do more, but, you know, practice beforehand before you get in that situation of asking for more from her and challenging her, so that you can have that mental connection when you get into those situations. So that's probably the best way to think about those things. I have mirrors myself, and, you know, it's a hormonal thing. We all understand that, especially, you know, being women. But handling it can be real tricky. But I think if you just apply those common sense principles, you know, you'll have something to go with and hopefully deepen your relationship and your leadership position with her, even in those situations.
So, Karen, when she's still on the horse getting ready to rear up, if she's on the back, go ahead and disengage the hindquarters at that point as she's getting ready to feel the horse go up.
I would have done it even before that point.
Before. Okay.
Oh, yeah. Because by the time that horse, and it doesn't hurt. I mean, if the horse some horses, if they have that pattern of behavior, you know, will kind of pop up, you know, unexpectedly. You don't always feel it coming. But do a lot of the disengaging of the hindquarters before you're in that situation, before it reaches that point of escalation. And if it is getting to a point where she's so, you know, frazzled or just mentally completely gone, you know, take, you know, bend the head, do lateral flexion like I show in the DVDs, and safely get off the horse, and then reassert your leadership on the ground, you know. But it's a tough one. And, you know, if she's that strong in her hormonal process, like I said, you know, consider consider having her stay. It's not a major procedure like it used to be, and it can be something that can, you know, give you a lot more years of enjoyment, be less frustrating for the mare even, and maybe a more long-term resolution. But, you know, like with my mares, they're so focused on me and my position of leadership that, to be honest, unless, you know, very rarely will I even know when they're in heat. And they're in heat. They're flirting with geldings over the fence, you know, kind of thing. But when they're with me, they're so riveted and so focused, but that's the ongoing positional leadership that I establish and continue to reestablish in every moment, you know, that I'm interacting with them. When I'm away from them, you know, have at it, you know, you can't really do much about it then, you know, but when I'm with them, my expectation is very high. And it's not that I'm, you know, a big mean jelly bean. They're simply riveted on the individual that they perceive as a very strong leader in their herd.
Is that procedure very expensive, do you know? Have you ever priced that?
You know, I think it's really come down in recent years. I think it's a very simple procedure anymore, but it's something to check with your vet with, just like, you know, any vet procedure across the country. It just depends, you know, on the veterinarian in the area that you live in. But, you know, it's something to be considered. Mm-hmm. Some people who know that the mare's not going to be bred and using poor performance, you know, they'll go ahead and stay a mare. It's just like staying a dog. You know, you just take that factor out of the equation, and then they're not dealing with those kind of hormone, you know, fluctuations in hormones for a performance season or something like that. So it's something to consider.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Well, we appreciate you submitting your question in, Sandy, and we hope that helps. And we'd like to hear back from you how that goes. So we'll go ahead and then, Karen, and move on to Anne. And she's from Vermont. And this one, it says, "Hi, Karen. I have a miniature foal who is 7 months. He has developed a biting habit. He doesn't get fed from hand, and he doesn't get treats, so I'm not sure where this came from. I've tried the mama's bite on the nose when he bites, but he treats it like a game. As soon as he bites, he quickly pulls his head back because he knows what is going to happen next. Any suggestions would be a great help."
Okay. Well, excuse me. The mama's bite on the nose doesn't work, as you already know. And for the reasons that you've described, it becomes a game. So the cure for backing is a very simple formula, and that is that the cure for biting is a very simple formula, and that backing cures biting. Okay? So if a foal or any horse thinks that it can come up and be mouthy with us, If we think about it in herd dynamics, what is that animal's opinion of us if they can put their mouth on us? And it's interesting because what we tend to do, and again, this is generalization, but especially as women, we tend to think that they like us. That means that they like us. And in horse herd dynamics, what it really means is that they view us in a lower position in the herd hierarchy, because that foal would not go out in the herd of horses and just, you know, put his mouth all over another horse, or that foal would not go up and bite another horse, or if it did, that other horse would sort it out, you know, right that second. And usually horses sort it out before it even gets to a point of biting by kind of the rule of proximity. So the horse that's lower in the pecking order or the herd hierarchy will want to come in and approach that other horse. So say take two foals, say they're, you know, a couple months old. They'll come in and they'll go to interact with each other. And the foal that's the lead foal, even at that young of an age, you'll see them fit into a very specific hierarchy. Now, the other foal may accept the invitation to play. And play, horse play, is very rough, isn't it? Those horses will nip and bite and come down, and you'll see them, you know, bite at the other one's legs, and they'll go down on their knees, and they'll go up in the air, and, you know, everything is around that kind of a play. Now, this kind of a play among adult horses, I call it the gelding game, because you'll see geldings just play that game. They'll play for a long time. It's really fun to watch. You won't see mares play that game as much. They kind of will, but usually mares kind of have the serious job of dealing with their hormones, I guess. But the other horses, they'll tend to want to, you know, get their mouth on things and pick things up. That's why toys are so much fun for horses. Get them a pylon or a cone or a ball. And some horses are very oral, and they'll carry things in their mouth and they interact. I mean, it's how they feel their world. So it's their nature to want to put their mouth on things, you know, and it's just like human babies. It's the tendency at a certain age to stick everything in their mouth until, you know, mom has to watch them, you know, every minute and make sure things aren't low enough and small enough, you know, to accommodate that natural attraction at that age. So here's the thing with foals, adult horses, stallions, every horse. I can touch you, but you cannot touch me, okay, uninvited. So when a horse comes into my personal space, uninvited, I don't care what horse it is, I do something to cause them to be uncomfortable invading my personal space. So I'll give you an example. I was up in Canada, wonderful place, very nice people. They had three beautiful mares. They raised standardbred horses, three beautiful mares with young foals. And we saw them, you know, in the afternoon. And then in the evening time, we went in to look at their feeder. They had a really neat way of feeding a square bill feeder. We went in there with flashlights because I wanted to see, you know, how they were set up. I didn't look at it when we had daylight. Well, I heard the mares and foals running in the dark towards us. Well, even in the dark, horses have amazing vision. And I just made sure that these mares and their foals, even though they're curious, they were not allowed to come up. You know, they wanted to. They came up and said, oh, well, I'm so cute. Aren't I cute? You know, I'm going to come in here. And you know, here I am with the owner of these mares and foals, and I'm just moving these foals away from me. I'm doing little things, nothing big. I didn't, you know, just doing things to have those foals realize that I'm not a plaything. And I was kind of thinking, oh, gosh, what the owner must be thinking because I'm not fawning all over these foals. But it's not that I don't. I love to hug them. You know, I love hugging. They're just adorable. I have that same instinct to want to have them close to me and petting them and get my hands on them. And, you know, that's a strong urge for us to do. But we were out there and we were looking at this, and the foals and the mirrors were all kind of browsing around a little bit. And in the dark, I heard the owner of these foals go, ow! And I mean, I heard it. And I said, "What? Are you okay? What happened?" And he said, one of those foals just reached right into his belly and just took a big old bite, you know, right in his stomach. But he was sitting there petting and fawning and, you know, messing around with these foals. Well, to me, in the language of horses, that's telling that horse and that foal that, yes, I'm a playmate. And if you take a swipe at them when they do that, they go, oh, boy, you have now accepted the invitation to play. This is how horses play with each other. So I do a couple of things with horses, whether it's foals or adults. Number one, have the horse back out of your personal space. It's just not permissible in my expectation, just like if I were a lead mare in a herd. Now, you have to be careful with foals because sometimes they get so exuberant in their play drive that they'll wheel around, and as they're leaving, they'll kind of throw a little kick out to you too. So you need to be kind of careful with loose foals that you don't take a big whack or do things like that because they're so spry and they're so agile and they're so playful that they really think that they're just, you know, playing with another foal. They don't look at you and go, oh, that's a human, you know, whack or bite. So what I like to do is have have the halter on the foal, have a rope on the halter, and use my tools, you know, just like I do with an adult horse or a miniature or anything, and have that horse learn to stand outside of my personal space. Okay. Now, when the animal stands and remains outside my personal space, then I can be the one to come in, close the gap, and come in and pet the horse and scratch them all over and rub their belly and do all those kinds of things. But then just like another horse would, a lead horse would, then I can change my mind and say, now go away from me again. Okay. So horses, I think one of the most challenging things with young horses is that we don't realize that horses, being prey animals, their brain is fully functional at the moment of birth. This is why imprinting works. Now, with predator species, kittens and puppies and humans, the brain is not fully functional at the moment of birth. The eyes aren't open, the ears aren't open. They pretty much know how to eat and sleep and cry and whimper and you know, potty and then start all over again. So they have to wait to a certain age to start developing those mental capacities. This is where sometimes we can make the mistake with a foal and think, oh, well, they're so little and they're so cute that we'll just, you know, fawn all over them and be close and have them invading our personal space. And they learn to be mouthy because it's their instinct to be mouthy. They just don't realize it's a human body that's in their mouth and inside of their teeth. And that's why, you know, the mama's bite doesn't work because it engages that play drive. But what you can do with a foal, a young horse, you know, imprint a foal within the first 2 hours of birth. After 2 hours, then you're not imprinting anymore. You're shaping behavior, and that's the stage that you're in. So when that foal puts their mouth on you, really, there isn't anything else to do. It's kind of too late at that point. So change the rules. You know, change the rules, change the expectations. It doesn't mean you can't pet the foal and scratch the foal and those kinds of things, but you become more aware of who's making those decisions. Horses invading our personal space and putting their mouth on us does not mean that they like us. In fact, it means the opposite. It means that they view us lower than them in the pecking order. And so it's really important to understand the difference. You can take the approaches that I show on, you know, in my DVDs with adult horses, do those same things with a foal, teaching them to move away from steady pressure, to move away from rhythmic pressure, to stay out of personal space. I wouldn't have them do circling or jumping or anything that, you know, puts any torque on their legs. But you can teach a foal to do many, many things, especially respect you and your communication that you're giving to them, just like the other members in the herd would do as well. So I'm glad this question came up because it's very, very common for us to misunderstand or misconstrue the nature of young horse behavior for affection rather than this dynamic. They're establishing leadership, you know, from a very young age, you know, just like our children are. If you've ever been around somebody whose two-year-old is running the entire household, you can see it in human examples as well. So just assert your leadership in a kind and direct way. And it's really amazing that foal will have even more attraction and more interest in what you're doing because you're interacting with them the way a leader would interact with them rather than just a playmate. Okay?
Okay. All right, Ann, thanks for submitting your question there. We hope that helps you. So, okay, Karen, you ready to go on to the next question?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, this one's from Nancy. It says, Dear Karen, help. I have adopted the care of two horses that haven't had anyone work with them for a very long time. My horse was stalled in between them, and he died late October. I was already getting them out for walks, grooming, and basic communication. I'd like to eventually be able to trail ride. They've been good trail horses in the past, but I'm at a barn where it is usually just tack up and go. Only a few of us do any groundwork. I've been using your DVDs, but I don't know how to proceed best on some serious problems. And Karen, she had several questions. We selected one for tonight, and then Nancy will try to maybe pick up some of your other questions in the future teleseminars. But the one for tonight is talking about horse A and B, and it says, neither horse lifts their feet to clean. Horse A is the worst when moving hind left side to side and stomping foot down after lifting it. I've spent time just touching the legs without asking to lift, then asking to lift. Horse B pins his ears, too. This scenario occurred on both after doing round pin work, groundwork that went pretty well for asking them to do new things. Some mama bites were required along the way, and at the end, both followed me around in figure eights, etc., as if I were their mama, without a lead rope, and looked relaxed. Both even matched my walking pace going back to the tack area where I put them in cross ties, and boom, the same old feet issues. Both are regularly shod by the same person who fitted shoes too small, too tight, so hooves were growing too straight. This has been corrected. I don't know if this could have had anything to do with the problem. I don't like the cross ties, but I don't feel safe with the feet. Any help there? Thanks, Nancy.
Well, it sounds like from, you know, what I can envision from what was described there, Nancy, what I would do is take them into an area, an enclosed area like a round pen or an arena or something like that, where they have room to drift. A lot of times when horses are being taught something or you're reshaping a behavior, and in this category it's reshaping the behavior, it's actually easier when you're teaching a horse to pick up their feet for the very first time. It's actually easier if you know what you're doing, because, you know, you can step the horse, you know, through it. And a lot of times we don't really realize what's going on in the horse's mind when we're asking a prey animal to pick up one of their feet. So we tend to, you know, especially as young horses, and not everybody certainly, but, you know, what we tend to do is just kind of reach down and grab that foot and kind of wrestle them and imbalance them and pick them up and then, you know, hold them till they quit struggling. And some horses will tolerate it, while other horses never feel confident or are taught in such a way that they can build their confidence holding up their feet. So if you think about it from a prey animal's perspective, you know, their number one survival mechanism is flight. And when we pick up a prey animal's foot, we're taking away their flight mechanism. So understanding that, a lot of times people will, with that awareness, they'll pick up the feet with a little different approach rather than, you know, oh, you're just being belligerent or you're being, you know, this or that or whatever. Well, you know, having that understanding of what it is that we're doing from the horse's perspective. So what I like to do with horses is teach them to pick up that foot to me. And we actually have a video that's in production on helping horses regain their confidence in picking up and holding their feet up. But what I suggest doing is going into a more open area so that the horse, the situation in the horse's mind is not being confined, is not being compounded by the confines of cross ties or the confines of a small area or being in an area that, you know, is either, let's say slick, because most people will have, you know, rubber mats or something over concrete. But a lot of times where people cross tie a horse, the footing isn't ideal. If the horse has trouble, they may, you know, even go down in the cross ties. So if I take a horse out to where it has good footing, has an open area, it can move and drift if it needs to, then I'll actually start working on the mind of the horse without the horse feeling at risk, if that makes sense, by their environment. So I'll have the horse online with a halter and a lead, and I do recommend that people start, you know, in my program, it says it in the DVDs, please start online. Being at liberty with a horse is the next stage. That's an advancing series of DVDs that we're working on right now. But start online with a horse because you can help a horse better when they're online. It's just like having dogs on leash or off leash. When you're in the teaching stage with a dog, you don't start off leash. Some people do. The highly skilled people, you know, can and will do that. And the same thing with a horse. Highly skilled people can start at liberty. But I recommend, you know, in the early stages when confusion between our communication and the horse's understanding is more prevalent, we start online so we can help the horse understand a little bit better. So it sounds like you've touched the horse's legs and feet, and I recommend doing that with a stick, with an extension of your arm. I recommend using other things, other foreign objects. Take, you know, a good thing to use that's kind of funny are those foam worm things that people use in swimming pools. You can take goofy things like that and, you know, something that isn't going to hurt the horse if they feel they need to pick at it. Or you can take a small piece of plastic and on the end of the stick and take that piece of plastic and take it down around the horse's legs and have that horse get used to foreign objects around it. So rather than just, you know, I don't want you to put your hands down around a horse's legs that you're not sure if they're going to have a reaction to. Because horses can and do, you know, kick at those things. So I like to, you know, have that horse be confident with all kinds of objects, you know, around their legs. And that better prepares them if they find themselves in a wreck. They get their foot through a fence or, you know, who knows, you know, horses will tip over a lawn chair and get their legs in through, you know, the legs of a lawn chair, all kinds of goofy things. The more things you can do, the better prepare your horse to keep thinking and be confident when they get into those crazy situations, you know, the better off everybody is. And, you know, take your rope, take your lead rope. I like, one of the reasons I like using a 12-foot lead is to take that lead rope and put it around the horse's legs, kind of above the knee, and rub it, you know, side to side. Take your, you know, the two sides of the rope and just keep rubbing that horse all the way up and down the leg. And then hold it still and put a little bit of pressure, just gradual to increasing the pressure and holding it. And the moment that horse bends the knee or lifts the leg or anything, release that and go back to rubbing with that rope. You can do a lot with soft ropes around the horse's legs. I do not recommend tying off a rope to a horse's legs. I've seen people go in and say, oh, yeah, you can take a rope and, you know, just tie their leg off and tie a leg up. Scotch hobble is a common term to tie a horse's back leg up to, you know, a saddle horn or up around their neck, you know, things like that. I don't agree with, you know, those kinds of approaches where you're just kind of cramming it down the horse's throat. Again, some horses will accommodate that, and it's a very common approach. You'll see it in, you know, all kinds of, you know, in books, and people will even show videos on how to do that. But I don't believe in that you have to put a horse into a situation where they feel like they have to fight it. You know, if a horse never learned to fight pressure or felt the instinct to fight the pressure, because it's either flight or fight. So when you take their flight away, then a horse will have a tendency to go into fight. But a horse that learns to fight the pressure, it sounds like that's what you're dealing with these horses. So you're going to recondition them to find a way to help them build their confidence. So I'd start in an open area. I'd find every kind of simulation that you can. I'd use, you know, a nice big soft wide rope like is on my lead lines, narrow ropes or lariat ropes, things like that will burn a horse, but especially if they kick. Please do not burn a horse's legs. But if you go in and you try to force it, I tried to help a horse in South Carolina years ago, and they gave me this horse for a demo, and it was so strong. The instinct in this horse to fight me holding this horse's feet was so strong, and I got to a point and I stopped and I said, okay, you're not telling me the whole story. What's the whole story? And they told me one of the most horrific stories where somebody came out and said, oh, I'll teach this horse, and they tried tying up a leg and throwing the horse to the ground and, you know, doing all this thing to, you know, thinking, well, I'll have the horse submit. They're just being belligerent and stubborn, and, you know, the horse has to submit. And so, you know, it was something that was so deeply patterned in this horse that it was going to take some time beyond, a 60-minute demo. You know, people could see the improvement, you know, but it was something that a person was going to need to learn to do to develop that horse's ability to build rebuild that horse's confidence. So I think if you think of those things, what's going on in the mind of the horse, then you can start helping that horse rebuild their confidence. So rather than feeling threatened, and that's what pinning the ears is. A lot of times people mistake pinning the ears for being aggressive. Oftentimes pinning the ears is being defensive. When we get defensive in a conflict or a conversation or an argument, I'll tell you what, we pin our own ears, not because we're being aggressive, but we're being defensive because we feel that we're being threatened or attacked. So take your time with these horses. Use some soft ropes. Use some things at a safe distance with a stick. And just start really doing something in an open area. Hold the lead line over your arm. Do not let the lead line drag, because if that horse gets threatened at all, and this is some of the things I talk about on my DVDs, could really program yourself to hold that lead line at an effective position. An effective position means that it's not so short that you're putting pressure on the horse's head and you're holding the lead line, but it's short enough that if you just moved your hand, you could tip that horse's nose towards you. Because a horse that's going to kick, it's very difficult for a horse to kick you when they're facing you. If you want to have that lead line short enough if that horse gets defensive around the hind legs, that you can bring the nose to you very quickly, so it pushes or kicks the hind legs away. But once those hind legs are moved away from you, get back in that position by the hind, you know, by the hip again. Even if it's just rubbing the hip or rubbing the hip, you know, with a stick or a string or a piece of plastic or anything like that. Because here's the thing to think about. And I sometimes get to where I'm, you know, playing the whole scenario of what I would do in my mind. And in this kind of scenario, you really need a DVD to show you all of the considerations and all the aspects to it. It's hard sometimes to answer these teleseminar questions in, you know, 15 minutes or less, because there's so many considerations, and I just feel horrible that, you know, I get off the teleseminar and I think, oh my gosh, I didn't tell them that piece. You know, I don't want you to get in trouble not having all of the, you know, considerations, you know, put out there. But this one piece is really important. If I go back by the hindquarters of the horse, okay, and I'd start at the front seat, because horses are usually less defensive around the front end, just because people tend to spend more time around the front feet than the hind feet. But when you get to the hind feet and it gets to a point, you know, where you're touching the hind feet, you know, with the end of your stick, an extension of your arm, or maybe throwing the end of the rope around their back legs, or, you know, whatever it is, if they get defensive and go to kick at it or pull their foot away or turn and face you, if you don't get back by the hind feet, you know, not you don't have to run back there, but if you don't reposition yourself to get by the hind feet and the horse is now facing you and you stand there for a minute, that hindquarters is thinking, okay, all I have to do is swing away or kick and swing away or look like I'm going to kick and then they pull their nose to me and then I get them away from the hindquarters. Again, we're inadvertently reinforcing that behavior. So that's what a stick can do for you. I can tip the nose towards me, but I can get myself back into that position, you know, alongside of the horse or at least by the shoulder or even back by the hip, so that I can, you know, pet and rub the horse and let the horse know that even when it has that kind of behavior, I might tip the nose towards me, which causes the hindquarters to go away, but it's not going to get me away from the hindquarters. They're not going to get the release of me not being next to the hindquarters, okay? I hope I'm describing that with just, you know, in a telephone conversation here. I want that horse, I might make that adjustment, get the hindquarters away, and then walk around to get right back into that position, the position or that threshold where that horse feels comfortable and confident again. So, you know, taking on horses that you're unfamiliar with or horses that have, you know, problems that, you know, other people don't want to deal with, you know, those are special needs, you know, kind of things. Those are behaviors kind of above and beyond the beginning stages of learning how to interact with horses. But again, if you go back to those principles of release reinforces behavior and just kind of observe not only the horse's behavior, but how you're responding to it. Excuse me. And then you can kind of see how you're shaping that behavior. So I promise there's a new DVD series that's coming out. You'll see an announcement here in the next week. And one of the future titles in this problem-solving series is going to be helping horses be more confident in preparing them for the farrier or the trimmer or picking up their feet. That's actually one of the topics that's going to be covered in this next stage of the problem-solving series. So, keep an eye out for that, but do some of the things that I'm describing here to the best of your ability and, just see how it goes. But remember, you're taking away the horse's flight instinct, so try not to put them in a situation where they feel that they have to fight you. And when they pin their ears or pull their foot away, another thing I like to tell people is, I'm going to place the foot down on the ground. If there was one thing that people do when they pick up a horse's foot, to the best of your ability, hold it while they're struggling. If they pull away from you and put it down, so what? You get do-overs, just start again, okay? Don't punish the horse or do anything, get after him, anything like that. Just go again and just out, just the horse stands there and goes, well, why am I fighting them? They're still going to pick up my foot. And then you be the one to place the foot down. A lot of times you'll see horse professionals, not all of them certainly, but they'll just drop the horse's foot. They're done working on it, trimming or chewing or whatever, and they'll just drop it. To me, if a horse is that trusting to have one of his feet in your hand, we have the responsibility to be respectful enough just to place that horse's foot down. And then maybe even take your hand and do one swipe down the leg just to let that horse know, hey, thanks a lot. I appreciate you cooperating with me. We don't always treat horses, with the respect that they deserve, in my opinion. And we can find little things that'll help rebuild the confidence in the horse, and again, changing that horse's mind about what it is that we're asking them to do. So hopefully, those are some things that can help you improve it. It may not resolve it in one session, but it's something ongoing. It sounds like you're committed to helping these horses have a better life with with having their feet handled. And watch for that DVD. We'll be having that one come out pretty soon. It's just about finished up. I have several horses as examples, so you'll see different scenarios, but you'll see all of these things step through. So that will give you a better visual image of what I'm trying to describe here.
Okay. Karen, we had a Indiana Horse Council board member that was telling me last night this similar situation that she has with her horse. So I've asked her to tune in tonight to listen. But she's had her horse since it was born, never had any trouble. Mm-hmm. Got a hold of a farrier that was doing exactly what you were just saying, would just drop the foot. And mm-hmm. now she's got an issue that they can't get that back leg picked up because her farrier created a problem for her that she didn't have. So I'm glad she's tuned in and listened to this as well tonight. Is there anything else that you'd hit on for that particular case? I mean, everything, she was able to pick this foot up fine, and evidently this farrier had gotten kicked the visit before from another, right before he came to her house in that same situation of that back leg. So he had some issues going on that he transferred to this horse, and now he's got a problem where she didn't have one. And it was basically just picking up and just dropping that foot kind of in a panic deal.
Well, and that's the thing, like I said, the horses in anything, trailer loading, feet, vet, any kind of thing we're asking them to do, can go along and not have a problem. And then, some little incident happens, and unless you, recognize it and address it right there, because a lot of people, if we don't have these kinds of challenges with horses, as long as everything is going okay, we're fine. But then one day something happens, like the scenario you just described there, Melinda, and now we don't know what to do. And so just going back to square one. It's just going back to square one. And that's why, when I do demos at expos and things like that, people want to tell me the story and the history and, what's happened with this horse and this kind of a thing. And you know, I don't necessarily need to know what happened up to this point. I'm simply going to observe the horse's response. And, you know, I've been handling horses, you know, so many horses for so many years that I can get a sense of how far I can, you know, take that horse. Again, I have habits to hold that lead rope at an effective position. So if the horse is going to kick me, I can just, without thinking, you know, tip that horse's nose to me. And, you know, and then recognize that I need to just get back in position and just, you know, start again. One of the best fears I had years and years ago, you know, I had young horses, I had different horses, all kinds of things. And, you know, he was really great because, you know, if the horse pulled away or pulled a foot or got bothered or jumped, you know, because that cat jumped or, you know, whatever, he just started again. He was completely unflappable and he'd just go in and he'd just put that foot again and just start again. And not everybody, you know, knows to do that. And sometimes people get after a horse. We don't realize that we're kind of, the horse is already confused if they're, you know, pulling their foot away. They're feeling defensive, you know, if they do that. And so, you know, going in and, you know, taking a get or done, you know, kind of an attitude doesn't help the problem. It actually unravels even further and can take a little problem and make it, you know, that much bigger. So it's unfortunate that the pattern of behavior is to this stage, but if you just, you know, go back and take your time, I mean, think about it. Most of the time when people pick up their horse's feet, it's just, you know, something like, you know, brushing them. I mean, you know, people are just saddle up and go. So if the horse has given them any kind of trouble, they tend to get frustrated. There's people waiting for them. The horse should know better, and you're 10 years old, or I never had a problem before, or whatever it is. If you can let those emotional expectations kind of sit, you know, when I have a horse that's having trouble, and Melinda, you've known me for a lot of years, if something's not right, I don't need to go on a ride. Mm-hmm. You know, I may go out there and think, okay, well, I'm going to go do this, and I'm going to go do that, and all these kind of things. But if that horse, for whatever reason, is having trouble picking up a foot or, you know, fill in the blank, whatever it is, I look at it as an opportunity to deepen my relationship with that horse. And I find it very fascinating to take, you know, what other people would see as a problem and say, oh, gosh, what can I do to help this horse have more confidence and more trust in me and what I'm asking of them? So don't go out there and you're late for your trail ride and people are waiting on you and that kind of thing and think, oh, well, you know, it's going to make the problem worse. Go out there when you've got nothing else to do, nobody's watching, nobody's around, you've got all the time in the world, and just take your time with that horse, helping that horse be more confident and trusting in the human environment. I mean, that's one of the most fascinating things we can do for horses. So just start over. It is what it is, and just start where the horse is at and make it a little better every time that you ask a horse to pick up their feet. So and leave it on a good note. Place the foot down, and I have a lot of horses. They'll go to pull their foot away just out of habit, and I just have them pick up their foot again. And if my horse Ben, he had a tendency to pull his feet away, and every once in a while he'll still do that. And I'll just go, oh, well, there that is again, no big deal. I'll just pick up his foot, hold it there until he turns loose to me, place it down. I love with back feet to see if I can place that foot down and have it be so relaxed that the leg is cocked. If I can rest that horse's foot at their back leg down, that their toe would just stay, their hip would be cocked, and their toe would just stay rested on the ground until I stand up and walk away. To me, that's the ultimate in relaxed and confident and trusting in any horse. And it can be done if you're, timing of your release and all those things are really good. But that's something I can show better on a day off. I promise I'll have that out here in the next few months.
You have to put a high standard on whoever you have dealing with your horses besides you, you know, whether it be your farrier or vet or whatever, that they're doing what you would want done with your horse and be willing to step up and say, hey, I don't want that type of behavior done.
Well, you know, and that's a really good point, Melinda, because there have been people that I've had, you know, work on my horses, and I travel all over the country, so different people are doing different things. And, you know, it's just like somebody who your child is in their care. If you don't agree with how they're interacting with the, you know, your child or your horse or your dog or, you know, your loved one, fill in the blank, you need to step up. You need to step up and say, hey, this is how my horse, you know, handles this. But at the same time, it's not the farrier's responsibility to teach your horse to stand confidently. You know, that's the owner's responsibility, because farriers and trimmers, they're coming in, they've got a schedule, you know, and a lot of times people leave it to the farrier or the trimmer, you know, to teach their horse to stand confidently and respectfully. It doesn't sound like it in the case you were describing, Linda, but please understand, and farriers and trimmers love it when I tell audiences that, because it's something that's misunderstood. And a lot of times we leave it to the farrier and the trimmer because we don't feel confident in our own skills. And that's why I put out the types of educational DVDs that I do, so that you can know what to do to better prepare your horse for living in the human environment. So.
Okay. Well, Karen, you know, we're running close to time here. I think we're going to have to pick up these next two questions next month to get those started. So, Deborah and Patty, if you'll tune in to us next month, we're sorry we didn't get to those tonight, but we'll certainly put those first at the list next month and get those out for you. So I can't believe how fast time has flown tonight, Karen.
Well, it's me trying to take what could be better explained in a video where you could see it and trying to describe it in words. But I will mention, I saw that one of the questions is a question about hats, and I will mention one thing just so you don't have to wait for a month. If you go on my website and you'll see recommended products, go to the hat company I highly recommend is called Aztec's Hat Company, and they have a great website, and I've had lots of different hats and hat ears and different things, and I just can't say enough about them. I have a good friend up in Flagstaff that went down, and she's had horses since she was a child, and you know, she was thrilled. She was absolutely thrilled with the hat that she got. You know, please wear a hat. It's not just for shade and protection from the sun. There's a lot of different reasons to wear a hat, but please wear a hat. More people should wear hats, really, when you, all things considered, but oftentimes those things are just not explained to us. So I just want to recommend there is a resource on my recommended products section that you can click on my website. So you don't need to wait for a month for that answer. But,
that's right.
Yeah.
We'll pick up the other one the first of the month, next month, I guess. So. We want to remind everyone, too, that Karen is on Dish Network, and that's 94.11. That's every Saturday and Sunday. I think it's 11 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, 8 a.m. Pacific Time. And I think you're also Tuesday and Wednesday at Eastern Standard Time at 7 and 1. So make sure you tune into that. If you miss those or you can't get onto Dish Network, you can go on the website and get the videos for those. So. Do you have anything else real quickly before we close here, Karen?
No, I just want to encourage everybody, you know, in the wintertime when we're faced with bad weather, and I know it's frustrating, we can't get out there with our horses, you know, this is the time to really, you know, watch some DVDs, really watch them, repeat them, turn the sound off, you know, really get your education, because even though you're not physically riding, a lot of things are going on in the learning processes in our minds. So you don't have to be so frustrated that you can't get that quality time with your horse. You can get that quality time with learning more about your horse. So utilize this time, even if you're not able to get out and actually have the interaction with your horse. You'll be surprised. Next time you see your horse and get that time, your horse is going to go, wow, you've been studying. So, you know, take advantage of that indoor time.
Yeah, and I recently found, too, because it's hard for me just to sit and watch. So I've moved my exercise piece of equipment to the TV, so I'm killing two birds with one stone.
Hey, that's a great idea.
And then, you know, we get it both done. So
that's a great idea, Mona.
Yeah. Good. So, all right. Well, listen, Karen, thanks for joining us tonight. We appreciate all the time you put in. We thank everybody else also for joining us. Tune in. Please submit your questions. We'll get to them as soon as we can. And everybody, thanks again, and have a great night. Be safe. Good night, Karen.
Thanks, Melinda. Good night.
Uh-huh.